We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 360. I'm back. I made it back from Chicago. Scott and JJ, you guys filled in last week, spent the entire time bashing me, which I was not too appreciative of. You know, after everything I went through trying to get home from Chicago, popping in some headphones for the flight home, listening to the two of you talk about me, and I couldn't say anything. You know, it's just annoying. It's just really annoying. And I hate missing episodes, especially when big things happen, like more ejections or...
I mean, that's like common practice these days.
Right, but it was a big series that I wanted to talk about, the Cleveland series. Right. So missing Monday's episode was tough for me. I hate missing those kinds of episodes.
Yeah, no, it's got to be worrisome when your arch nemesis is coming on to fill in for you as well. You never know really what's going to come out of his mouth sometimes.
Well, you know what? I expected everything he said. No surprises there. I was a little surprised that you spent a lot of the time bashing me, too. I thought we are on the same team.
Yeah.
You and I have done over 350 episodes together. Right. We're supposed to be backing each other up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Big time. Definitely. But I felt like I had an opportunity. I felt like I finally had an opportunity to just say a couple things, you know. It wasn't big. I mean, it was more of like the venting of the LeMahieu and the Oros. It's not... You know what it is that when one person carries the predictions and the promo or the segment that we've been doing for a few years, the bold predictions, we've been doing that for a few years now. When one person of the two carries the show and, like, you know, gives it legitimacy and makes sure that they are grounded in, you know, actual baseball knowledge and moving forward and presence and things like that, you know, just all these things. You know, somebody, you know, occasionally some credit from the other person. That'd be nice.
You don't really believe that, so I'm not going to really take that any further, because you were as right as you were on your predictions this year. You were equally wrong on your predictions last year, and who the hell knows what'll happen next year? You'll guess again, and you might be right, and you might be wrong. So that's really what predictions are. That's
where you're wrong.
That's just what they are.
That's where you're wrong, because the LeMahieu thing was grounded in actual baseball. Like, that was a real that one I felt really, really, really confident about.
So I was actually thank you for bringing that up, because as you were talking about this on the show, and I was angry, I was looking up. You know, he does not have that many home runs to the right field short porch, as we like to call it. Like, that is not the reason he has more home runs this year. It's not because he's hitting wall scrapers to right field. Yes, he had a couple over. He had one over the weekend on Sunday, I believe it was, right down the right field line. But he's just been a phenomenal hitter this year.
Yeah.
And a lot of his home runs to right field are actually to the right center field gap, which is not where the ball flies out easy cheap at Yankee Stadium.
No, but again, that wasn't part of the analysis. I mean, yeah, he's going to get some of the scrapers, but it's going to be more intentional knowing what right field is. And sometimes, you know, the ball doesn't go where you want it to go, and you're trying to hit it to all the way to right and get a little bit more of it, and it goes to the right center. So,
what do you think is a bigger contributing factor to the fact that LeMahieu has a career high in home runs? That he's playing in Yankee Stadium with the short right field porch, or that he's just a really good hitter who, I know Yes has talked about this a bunch of times, hits the ball hard more often than most players in the league. And because the ball is flying farther this year, the juiced balls, he's just getting a little extra distance on these balls that otherwise would have been maybe one hoppers off the wall or off the wall.
Lots of factors to it. Lots of factors to it. The ball being juiced definitely
like
helps.
Whatever it is, they're home runs.
The ball being juiced is going to win my playoff bet. That's what's going to happen.
It really is. It's going to, you're going to hit 25, no problem. But quickly, so I, like I said, nightmare trip from Chicago back to New York. I finally landed over 24 hours after I was supposed to land. And last night around midnight, so Wednesday night around midnight, my bag finally arrived. It was sitting at the Newark airport for 48 plus hours. It's just
at least it wasn't the reverse side in your home without your bag, rather than being in Chicago without a bag. That
is true. Although I spent one night in Chicago without a bag.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't sound like a good trip.
No. And I, like you said, I did yell at a couple customer service agents. And you know what I found out is that Airport customer service agents, all their job, all they're trying to do is pass you to the next customer service agent that's closer to the airport exit. So then finally, when you're talking to the final person at baggage claim and they're like, you know, you have two options here. You can leave or you can go F yourself. You're just like, okay, fine. I guess I'll leave because the exit's right there and I can't yell at anybody else. That's all they're doing.
So I don't know if you remember, I think it was last year when I almost got booted out of an airport because, and I was being relatively cordial. I was just asking a question. That's it. I was just asking, I mean, I don't ever have a tone, you know, never. So there's never. No, it's not like I was asking it in a certain way, but yeah, when you're at that, like the other option that I think is a very good possibility, which kind of goes into your two options, is not get filmed while saying anything out of their mouth right. as well on a camera. So if they see any of that, they're like, oh, shut down. Yeah. And they can do nothing. So that's my thing is they can do nothing. I know they can do nothing. They're just a messenger.
But they tell you they can do something, which gets you to the next person because the lady upstairs told me, I rerouted your bag and it is downstairs at baggage claim. And then I get downstairs to baggage claim and the guy's like, no, they have no ability to do that upstairs. Your bag is on the plane going to Newark tomorrow. Sorry, sir. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah. No.
I guess I'm sleeping in this and I'm going to CVS to buy some toiletries.
Yeah, that's frustrating when they just lie to your face.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. Tell people about, we got a couple exciting things going on. Obviously, the August 31st event. Quickly. Update on that.
Yeah, so August 31st event. The tickets are still for sale. We're still going to sell them probably through the weekend. So if you have not gotten your tickets and your group together, you're waiting entirely too long. Go get it. Go get your tickets. Go get them. 205 is the section that we always sit in. Obviously, this game is versus Oakland. We've seen what's happened in the past couple games. These are contentious games. We need to give them some payback, I think, you know, when they come into the Bronx. So it'll be a good game on Saturday. We normally do the pregame at the dugout. A little different this year, a little different this this particular event. We're going to be over at Billy's. We're doing some stuff with Blue Point where we're going to get some drink tickets on top of the everything that you're already getting. So you're getting some Pinstripe Pilsner at the pregame. Courtesy of Blue Point, and the rest of it is going to be, you know, similar to what we've done. We've done the t-shirts, you get the beer, you get the hot dog in the stadium, and you sit with us in section 205. So it's $69. The value is insane. Go grab up. The t-shirts are up. I think I put them on the website, so they're on the website. You can see them on the event page, and we'll put them on
what
social at some point.
What are they?
They say we are.
I know what they are, but tell people.
We are savages in the Bronx. They're white shirts with pinstripes. So cool shirts. It looks good. And, you know, that's kind of what we are. The fan base. I think we all identify with this savages thing. And I think it's spreading into the stands now. So pumped up for that. And then obviously the big news around the Bronx Pinstripes chat rooms and everything inside here is Cameron Maben. We're doing some stuff with Cameron Maben. We're working with him and his team on a fundraiser that is going to be, we're raising money with t-shirts. We designed some shirts, the big one called Hug Season, basically his arms going around the words hug and then the letters SZN. It's a cool design.
Not to be confused with Susan.
Not to be.
Which someone confused that. Why are we hugging Susan Waldman? I said, you can hug Susan Waldman all you want.
I kind of like the double meaning of it, though. But yeah, go check them out. They're all over the website. They're pretty much everywhere you can go. If you see Bronx Pinstripes, you'll probably see the Cameron Maben shirt. He's wearing it. There's pictures that came out last night of him. He's wearing it on the R2C2 podcast, which he's co-hosting this week. So there's a lot of good things happening around that.
You know what's wild about Cameron Maben? Like, I remember the first game he played for the Yankees. It was in San Francisco, and it was after Clint Frazier went down, after Stanton went down, after all these guys went down. And you're like, oh, are we really bringing in Cameron Maben, who couldn't get out of AAA for Cleveland? And here we are a few months later, and Cameron Maben has been such a huge contributor, not only on the field statistically, but also he seems to be an awesome clubhouse guy, and everyone has rallied around him and said what a great teammate he is. He's kind of entrenched in this 2019 Yankee season when he wasn't even on anybody's radar back in April.
No, nobody's radar. I mean, like, nobody in baseball, because he was floating around for a little while. He was like one of those guys that you remember hearing about when he was coming up. Big prospect, you know, maybe didn't live up to what everybody thought he was going to be, but With the Yankees, what he's become is just, you know, a great clubhouse presence. Obviously, like you said, like he's contributing in the field, gives the team flexibility and Boone by playing all three outfield positions. So he's been an unbelievable addition, and we're super thankful to work with him and his team on this Hug Season shirt. The proceeds are going to be going to Maven Mission, which this particular fundraiser will be going towards the Dream Charter School in Harlem. So we're raising money for those guys, which is just an awesome school to raise some money for. And they do some great things. And I know Cameron does some good things with them as well. So go check it out. Go on our website or go on the fan shop and go grab a t-shirt. Again, 100% of the proceeds are going to his Maven Mission and the Dream Foundation. So we're not keeping a penny, which is fun. It's exciting. I've been wanting to do a lot more nonprofit stuff with Bronx Pinstripes, and this is kind of our first step into it. So we're happy to partner with them.
Awesome stuff. All right, so the Yankees are in the middle of a little bit of a tough stretch of road games, 19 of 25 on the road, and they've been such a dominant team at home. 7-10 winning percentage on the road, still good. They're now at 576 after the loss last night. But you can definitely see the difference between this team, home and road. And I think there's nothing more evident than, like we talked about, CeCe's home and road splits. Well, turns out Herman has similar home road splits. He's got a 2.24 ERA at home and a 5.82 ERA on the road. And you're probably thinking, okay, what is the biggest difference there? It's actually home runs allowed. He's allowed double the amount of home runs on the road than he has at home, which doesn't make any sense because Yankee Stadium is a home run hitting park. And I know you play in a lot of road parks that are home run hitting parks like Camden Yards, but you're also playing in parks like Oakland, which does not yield a lot of home runs.
Unless you're playing the Yankees, and it seems like it does because these guys are hitting the ball out like crazy.
But his walk rate and strikeout rates are very similar home and road. So it's just the major difference is he's getting hit harder on the road than he is at home. I don't know if it's a comfort thing. Maybe he feels better on the mound at Yankee Stadium. Maybe he just sleeps better in New York. Like, there's a number of thousand different factors that it could be. But we've got a big enough sample size now where 56 innings at home, 65 innings on the road. He's a completely different pitcher.
Yeah, and the other night when we were just watching his start, you could tell that he wasn't as sharp. I mean, that was and when you're looking at the numbers too, I think it's hard to tell, you know, how a guy is throwing that day, even if you see some of the walks to strikeout numbers are similar. I mean, he did walk more guys. There's no doubt. He walked two guys. He was not around the plate as much. When he was fighting from behind in the count and putting the ball over the plate. And that's when they were hitting the ball out. So, you know, in that particular start, he was definitely not as sharp. And you saw he just didn't have command for the zone. I made fun of myself because after I did I stayed up to do the post game. And what was my analysis? I was like, oh, Herman wasn't good because he didn't throw strikes, didn't get swings and misses, and the ball got hit out or something stupid like that. Well, yeah, obviously.
Hold on. Did the Yankees lose because Oakland had more runs than them?
Yeah, they did, yeah. Oh, it was weird. But I mean, that's what it was. It's the stuff wasn't sharp and he was leaving the ball over the plate. And, you know, when he doesn't have that sharp break on some of his breaking stuff and you're not seeing the big difference between the fastball and the breaking stuff, I think he's more hittable, especially if you're not over the plate. So all of these things, while obvious, are the reason and very, very much contributing factors. We lucked out with him because he almost caught a cleat and did something bad to his leg and foot. It looked like it was just another thing for the Yankees season with this injury bug, but we lucked out, I think, and he was all right.
He said after the game, the extra rest, because he was pitching on two additional days' rest, did not negatively affect him. I don't know how it would. I mean, usually a guy gets extra rest, he's going to be stronger. So
I mean, Hap threw on 7 days' rest last night, too. So
Hap has not been good all season, though. Like, is anyone surprised that Hap struggled on Wednesday night? No. Like, we're at the point with Hap where everyone's given up on him. Yeah. So no one's mad at Jay Hap anymore. He goes out there, he gets 4 or 5 innings, he gives up a bunch of home runs and leaves with the bases loaded. It's like, yep, that's what Jay Hap does.
Yeah, no. I mean, you'd think that maybe the extra, I'm just saying extra rest, not helping anybody in Oakland.
Maybe next time give Jay Hap like 42 days rest, see what happens.
It's, yeah, you know, there's a lot of contributing factors here. The ball being one of them, and I think it's flying out, and if you're not on your game, I mean, look at Verlander. I know he's given up home runs in his career too, but they were showing the list of pitchers that had given up the most home runs in the American League, and Jay Happ in elite company there with Verlander neck and neck.
And Fires, who pitched last night for Oakland, has also given up, I think it was 22 or 23 home runs coming into the season. The biggest difference between Happ and those guys,
he hasn't lost Verlander, a game since like Fires, May.
But also innings pitched, they've pitched way more innings than Jay Happ.
Yeah.
So Jay Happ's home run per nine innings is far greater than those guys. And I'm sorry, yeah, Justin Verlander's giving up home runs. It's a lot of solo home runs because he's still striking out a boatload of people and pitching deep into games, and his ERA is still fantastic.
Exactly.
It's just he's been a fly ball pitcher his whole career because he's a four-seam fastball pitcher, and now instead of 365-foot fly balls, they're going out of the ballpark.
Right. Cone was talking about that last night on the broadcast. I thought it was an interesting conversation that probably isn't getting enough attention. The guys that are predominantly fastball pitchers, the ones that do rely on the fly ball to get outs and to get deeper into games. You have ground ball guys, you have outfield or pop fly guys, and then you have strikeout guys. And a lot of times the fastball guys, they will rely on strikeouts and the flyout.
Medium deep fly balls.
And those medium deep fly balls, like you said, are going out of the park this year. So they become very different on paper, very different on the mound. And like last night, just watching Happ, and I know he's been struggling all year. But we've also talked about how kind of like, you know, he's that cerebral type guy who's like a just can think you think he can just figure it out. Visible frustration, like the entire game, you could tell that nothing was going right, and he was wearing it the entire time, which normally he doesn't do. He's usually more calm and collected, and you don't see it as much, but it was all over his face. In between innings, it seemed like every single inning, him and Sanchez were just having like deep discussions. Like they were both like just trying to figure out what the hell was happening. And yeah, I mean, I think it's a big factor, and Cone was talking about that. It's a, you know, these fly ball guys are having a lot of struggles, and it's across the league.
And I know what Happ is probably going through. He knows that he's, barring another major injury to this rotation, Jay Happ's not pitching in the playoffs. He might not even be on the playoff rotation. So he is trying desperately to figure anything out between now and the end of the season to show the Yankees management that he can at least be on the playoff roster. And he's not finding anything. It's like everything he's done in his career to be successful. He's been a successful major league pitcher for a very long time.
Up until this year.
Right.
He's gone through struggles.
He's gone through ups and downs. He's been better some years, worse some years. But when you look at his last four seasons in the American League, he's pitching for Toronto. He's been a very, very good pitcher.
Yeah.
And he's been a very, very bad pitcher this year. Any way you cut it, Jay Happ's been bad this year.
There's no way to doubt it. There's no way to go around it. And, I mean, we've talked about this in the past when you're looking at the stuff. Or you're looking for diminished, stuff on his fastball, the pitch that he uses. And while I think it's down a little bit, it's not much. It's not like he's fallen off the face of the planet. It's not that. That's not what's happening. Balls just balls.
So look at the difference between 2018 to 2019. I can't imagine there's much of a difference in Jay Happ's, like you said, stuff between 2018 and 2019.
No, there really isn't. We've done the analysis on like on the fastball numbers and the spin rate and all these things. Like,
spin rates
pretty close.
Spin rates comparable. Velocity's comparable. If anything, there's just a slight decline which comes with age, but it should not be this sort of drastic drop off where he turns into not even a league average pitcher. He's below league average pitcher this year. So yeah, the ball might be the biggest contributing factor. And I don't want to just, I'm not completely excusing Jay Happ because everyone's got to pitch with that baseball, but he's got to figure something out. If the ball doesn't change next year, he's not going to be any better next year. It's going to be the same thing.
I think the ball's going to change.
You think it's going to change back to the other way? You think there's going to be an overcorrection? I mean, you might be right. I don't know. I mean, score, everything is up this year. We talked a lot about this home run thing. It's like, oh, scoring. Well, scoring's actually up this year.
Yeah.
The ERA, I know Frank was posting these statistics because he wrote an article a couple days ago. The league average ERA is like 4.5 something. It hasn't been this high in like years.
So I don't know how you do this, but it's going to be addressed. There's no doubt about it. And because they've made changes every offseason to go with a tighter ball or however they're juicing it. they can certainly make an adjustment to go back, right? Like they have the specs for the 2018 ball, right? Somewhere they're under lock and key somewhere, or the 2017 ball. I mean, there's ability to do this and to manufacture something that's a little different, and to at least make some kind of a concerted effort to raise the seams or whatever the heck it is. I do think there's going to be some kind of adjustment, because, you know, the players union is probably, I can imagine the players union in this offseason really bucking up about this. Although, yeah, although the
pitchers
offense,
are not happy.
Although the you're offense starting, is happy.
The offense is happy, but you're starting to get pitchers rallying together, like you saw around the All-Star game, talking about the ball.
Yes.
And how this is ludicrous.
Yes.
So they don't want, baseball doesn't want that. They don't want any negative publicity. But after Hap, I want to talk about how Chad Green comes in with the bases loaded. He allows one of the runs to score, but he pitches three innings, which I think is interesting. I don't know if this is they're starting to stretch Chad Green out more, maybe using him as an extended opener to set him up for an extended opening situation.
Are you going to say super opener? Are you going to go there?
No, I'm not going to say super opener. Okay. He's just an extended opener. He's not quite a super opener.
so we're that's the bridge between opener and super opener, is extended opener.
You've got.
Oh, I
short
love it.
Opener.
I love.
Let me break it down for you.
I love more of them. Let's keep going.
Short opener. That's one inning.
Oh, Jesus.
Standard opener. Two innings. Extended opener. Three innings. Super opener. Four innings. Shitty starting pitcher.
Five.
Four plus innings.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, it is an interesting, you know, when you're looking at what's happening with him, the fact that he came in that game alone is interesting. But that he goes three innings. Yeah, I think I think they're trying to get everybody to four innings. I think we're trying to get as many four inning guys as we can possibly have.
Every pitcher on the roster, four innings.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't like the, every starting pitcher, four innings. Like you're probably not going to get into the fifth, because if there's a third time through the lineup, probably not going to see you. So yeah, we're becoming a four inning team. This is the new thing, and it's not going to be open. The word opener is not going to be involved. They're going to come up with something else. It's going to be something different, something totally different. They're going to coin it. It's going to be trademarked, and it's going to be one of the
can we think
the accolades
of it
for
now?
The nerds.
Can we think of it now and put it on a T-shirt so that everyone
we beat everybody to the punch?
Beat everyone to the punch by 42 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you know we're rich.
Let's head them off with the past. Uh-huh. And figure it out, but let's just not say it on air.
Right. But I do agree with you and what you guys were talking about last episode, that they're just trying any way to get outs. And it doesn't really matter who they come from or how they come from. You just need outs. And if Chad Green can give them nine outs in a ball game, then great. Because Chad Green's not going to be pitching. If he opens, or if he starts, or if he super opens, he's not going to be pitching the next day anyway. So what's the difference? If you can get, instead of six outs, you can get nine outs, even better.
I mean, I guess, but it kind of, at some point, you're starting to defeat the purpose of why it's intended. I mean, the whole reason for these guys to be in there in short amount of times is to go through the lineup one time to get their best stuff out of one inning, you know, like put out a fire and go on to the next very good savage that you have in the bullpen.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, in the playoffs is, okay, so Chad Green goes one or two innings in an opening situation. Who are you going to next? You're not going to David Hale or Nestor Cortes against the Cleveland Indians in the American League Division Series. That's not happening.
Right. Well, that's why I hate the opener for the playoffs, because you're going to have more starting pitchers on your roster that have the ability to go deeper into a game. So that's why it doesn't make sense to me, because you're not having those guys. You have, or if you are doing that and you want to have Chad Green you know, extinguish the first inning and get through the top of the lineup, and then you can bring in someone else who's not in the playoff rotation but is a starting pitcher. So I don't know. I still don't like it, but we'll see what happens. Four innings. It doesn't matter, because they're all going to pitch four innings anyway, so who cares?
This is the first time the Yankees have played the A's since the wild card game, and I was reading a MLB.com article by an Oakland beat writer, and he was actually saying, the A's circled this series like as we want payback. Like, they're eyeing the Yankees and saying, you bounced us from the playoffs last year. This is we got to get retribution. It just happened to take until late August before they played them for the first time.
He used that narrative. He said that was what they had been talking about or like thinking about.
I forget the exact phrase, but he mentioned that it's the first time it was something. The headline was something about revenge. partial revenge for wild card game or something like that.
Is this his narrative though, or is that coming from the players talking about it?
I don't know.
Well, it makes a difference.
It makes a difference, but you know it doesn't make a difference.
I want to know what they're saying.
For my purposes, it doesn't make a difference.
I want to know what they're saying. I want to know if Chapman, who doesn't really talk, and I just kind of like the player, just sits over there, does his job. A phenomenal third baseman. My God, that guy has a vacuum to the left side. But is he talking? Like, I want to know if he's talking.
Doubtful.
Yeah, I doubt it too.
Anyway, Judge hit a home run to left field.
Mike Fiers is probably talking.
Aaron Judge, 467 feet
yeah.
to left field.
Shot.
Everyone loved it. And this is what we talked about. Like, we just want to see something sexy off of Aaron Judge's bat. And that was sexy. It was a crush shot. Just looked like the old Aaron Judge. But the interesting thing is, he got a little sassy in the post-game press conference about it. Which tells me it's a thing.
Well, of course it's a thing. Everybody knows it's a thing. It doesn't mean it's an injury thing.
No, I'm not saying it's an injury
thing. But that's where everybody goes. That was the thing he was thinking about. Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about it.
So, then why is he getting sassy? Just be like, yeah, that felt good. I hadn't pulled one all season.
Because he can't.
Why does he have to be defensive?
It was not defensive. It was late.
Meredith asked him the question.
It was very late. It was Meredith, the two of them. Yes, go ahead.
Very, very late. It's 10:30 p.m. for them.
I mean, they just got there. Set it up.
They got there Monday, off day. Anyway, she asked him the question, and he gets a little defensive. What are you talking about?
Yeah, no, it was funny. I thought the interaction was funny. And
what's the problem?
And Meredith was like taken aback. She's like, hitting the ball to right field or to left field. Like, it was almost like, well, damn, I can't believe he just came back to me asking that. Like, Aaron Judge never does this. But it was funny. I think they have a good rapport, and they were able to like make that an interesting dialogue. If that was Clint Frazier, we would have murdered him.
Oh boy.
Murdered him. He hates women. He doesn't respect anybody in the media. Like, all sorts of, like, it would have been the narratives for Frazier if he did that would have been unbelievable.
And if it was Greg Bird, if he was still a thing, we would just had the little heart-shaped bubble on the TV screen that popped
awkward moment between two lovebirds.
So a little history of Aaron Judge this season. So injured his oblique on April 20th. He was out until June 21st. He actually came back and was okay. He was fine. His on-base percentage and batting average was actually on the rise when he first came back. But he really started slumping on July 25th. So pre-injury, before the season, before he got injured on April 20th, he hit a home run every 18 plate appearances, which is in line, almost identical to his home run rate in 2018. Way lower than 2017, but I'm not quite sure we're ever going to see 2017 production again, and that's okay. Like, he doesn't need to be 2017. He was still a all-star level MVP vote getter in 2018. Post-injury, so when he came back on June 21st, one home run every 28 plate appearances. Okay? Since he started slumping, which started, I traced it back to July 25th. That's when he just went into a terrible slump. One home run every 54 plate appearances.
Yeah. So, again, like, this is, I've been fighting off the people that are, they're you know, calling him injured and things like that. I put my doctor hat on last time because I don't think, I never thought he was injured from this when he came back. I don't think the doctors or the trainers or the Yankees, period, are letting Aaron Judge play hurt. I just, not with an oblique. If it's something else that you can't do further damage, then maybe, like, if it's a little nick up. But this is such a huge factor to everything that he does on the field. I don't think the Yankees are messing around with that. And to me, it just looked like he was getting into bad habits. I mean, he was swinging it. He wasn't swinging at good pitches. He was going the opposite field, absolutely, because I think it was intentional. It was something that he had put a focus on. He's talking about that two-strike approach, going to right field as well. And I think it just kind of took over his mechanics a little bit and got in his head, clearly got in his head. And you're starting to see that. And, you know, he just didn't have the Aaron Judge mechanics that we had seen and fallen in love with, where he's hitting moonshots to left field. And you're starting to see him get hot, starting to see him, you know, put it all together, get a little more confidence. Because I think also when you start believing it in your brain, you know, you can do it a lot easier. You can almost see it happening. So I think we're in store for some good things from him.
I agree. I think I've always agreed with you that I don't think the trainers would send him out there injured. But what if it's a mental thing that he's just having a difficult time getting over, that he doesn't want to re-injure his oblique by taking his A-plus swing? So he's trying to get away with his B-plus swing.
Yeah, I just don't think that's the case. I think it's easy to say that when you're in a bad stretch with your mechanics, because it's just an easy thing to rely on as far as like fans looking at what you're doing. But he's still swinging the ball at the bat hard. He's still doing these things.
Yeah, his exit velocity is tops in the league this
right
year.
So it's not like he's holding back.
Launch angle is different though. That's the biggest difference why he's not getting the same
mechanical
power. Rohan also wrote an article this week about who's been lucky and who's been unlucky on the team from the offensive side. And Aaron Judge has been one of the more unlucky players in baseball as far as actual weighted on base average and expected weighted on base average. The difference between it says he's expected to get on base higher than he is actually getting on base, which means he's getting a little unlucky. On the flip side, you look at other guys. Gio Urshela was an example, and Mike Tauchman was an example of those guys were getting a little lucky. Not to say that they're not good. They're still good, but they're actually getting a little lucky. Like Mike Tauchman's batting average on balls in play was like something like 400 or 500, which is not sustainable.
Yeah. You see a lot more weak contact off those guys too, with little bloops and dinks and dunks, especially Urshela. I mean, I feel like I've seen a bunch of those base hits. Again, not knocking that, that's fine. Like he's still even hitting the ball to the park. Like honestly, and the production, like any of it, is an unbelievable, unexpected, beautiful piece of baseball. But he's definitely getting a lot more soft contact that's hitting green, whereas Judge still hitting the ball hard everywhere. I mean, last night. Hit a rocket to the left side to Chapman, who just vacuumed it up and threw over first inning. Like hit the ball very hard, went right to him.
Chapman, when you see Chapman play third base, then you realize what a real like.
Well, that's too far. That's unfair. He is setting the standard. Him and Arenado are head and shoulders above everybody else.
Mm-hmm. No, it's crazy. Even eyeballs, you see it's like, oh, that's not a play that our guy normally makes. And he made it look simple.
I mean, it's hard for me to say that about Urshela, though, honestly, because the eye test doesn't say that to me. The eye test says that Chapman is fluid as all hell to his left side and yes, vacuums up balls. But I just haven't seen anything from Urshela thinking that he's not a very, very good third baseman. That's why the metrics don't make as much sense to me. And they were talking again last night about range and, you know, maybe the range, which you can't really see with your eyes, affects the negative side of his defensive metrics a lot more than people think.
So this episode of the Bronx Pinstripe Show is brought to you by CBS Sports HQ. I think we're all aware that sports TV nowadays is full of made up drama, beating the same topics into the ground, and hot takes from people who don't even believe what they're saying. Is that really what it is? I never noticed that. CBS Sports HQ is here to change all that. CBS Sports HQ is a network that streams live 24/7, and they have coverage that's just focused on the game. They bring you the latest news, highlights, previews, and reactions to all the on-field action. Their fantasy sports experts will give you the info you need to make the right calls for your lineup, and their betting experts will help you cash in on your wagers. Yeah, Scott, maybe you could check that out, make a little extra cash. There's no fake debates, no politics, just sports for real sports fans. The best news of all, it's free. You heard me right. It's free. I don't mean free for a week or free for a month. No, it's totally free.
It's just free. It's actually free.
It's just free. It's just free.
No money. No money.
Yeah, you don't need a special cable package or anything like that. There's no gimmicks. There's no, read the fine print here. All you need to do is log in. Just open the CBS Sports app and watch anytime from anywhere on your phone or at home or on your Apple TV, Roku, or Fire TV. It couldn't be easier. Download the CBS Sports app and watch CBS Sports HQ today. So Tanaka, this is the third big start in a row for him. Think about it. In Toronto, Yankees trying to split the series, and Tanaka had not pitched well in a long time, so that was a big start for Tanaka. And then last time out against Cleveland, coming off the getting demolished the first game against Cleveland, Tanaka needed to right the ship, just say, hey guys, we're not going to get crushed in this series. And now tonight, Thursday night, looking to avoid a sweep.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Let's keep testing. This is a beautiful thing when you're up, 9+ games in your division. You want to get tested. You want to see what guys are made of. You want to see guys correct their struggles. And so far we've been seeing that with Tanaka. He's been that guy as of late that we needed, I think. And you know, he served as the stopper from that route in Cleveland. And let's see if he can do it again tonight. I think it's a good test. I like the situation. I don't like losing two games in a row, but I like the situation that Tanaka's in right now. And to see if you know what we can do here and string another good start together.
They're also running into Oakland at a bad time.
Yeah.
As far as Oakland's a hot team, they just took a series from Houston. I know they're not going to win the AL West, but they're currently in a wild card spot. Oakland is.
And they're obviously they're putting up bulletin board material all over the place.
This is a revenge
they
series.
Hate us. I thought people were like cool and just like had good vibes on the West Coast. Isn't that what you hear? Good vibes on the West Coast.
No, they're
apparently not. Apparently in Oakland, they're throwing daggers.
Yeah, come on. You know Oakland. You know Oakland fans. Those are Raiders fans. They're losing the Raiders. This is the last season for the Oakland Raiders. They're pissed off people.
I don't put, for whatever reason, in my brain, like in my head, I don't put Oakland A's fans and Raiders fans in like the same headspace. Like I can't see them in the same.
Because atmosphere. Okay, I know why. Because you're thinking of the Raiders fan, the big fat guy that dresses up in the black.
He's got spikes on his shoulders.
The black pirate gear, yeah, with the spikes on his shoulders, who looks like he's going to murk you.
Yes.
And then Oakland Athletics fans, what are you picturing?
An elephant, a clown?
A hippie with a guitar?
Yes.
Like Barry Zito.
Literally.
Barry Zito still goes to Oakland A's games.
Absolutely. I'm thinking of the guy who's playing the, what's the Australian horn that we hear? Every game and playing the drums. Yes, there are a bunch of hippies in the outfield playing instruments. That's the Oakland A's fans.
You also hear that because there's like 42 people in the stands and the place echoes,
yeah,
thanks to the big structure out. And are they going to take away that structure in center field?
I have no idea.
Do you know?
I have no idea. Not keeping up on what they're doing with structures out in Oakland.
They need to fix
a lot of concrete out there, though. I know that.
They need to fix the plumbing and get rid of the rat infestation.
Do you mind all the noise and stuff coming in the background? What's the name of that? The horns?
Venezuela?
It's not Fernando Valenzuela. It's something like that.
I don't know what the name of the horn is.
No. I forget the name of it, but it's I don't mind it.
Most of these West Coast, because these West Coast games for a midweek. After I'm recording, we recorded this podcast at 6:30 in the morning. I'm going to work after this. There is no way in hell I can stay up until 2 in the morning to watch these games. So I'm usually listening to like the first half of the game while laying in bed, listening to John and Susan. And all they do is complain about the noise in between every pitch. Oh my gosh, they're so loud. John, I can't even hear you over the noise.
Please don't do that voice. That is a terrible voice. That is a terrible voice.
So that is what I hear for like 3 or 4 innings as I'm going to bed. So that is my experience with the Vuvuzelas out in the Oakland Coliseum.
The Fernando Valenzuela of Oakland. It's a, I don't mind it. I don't know. It reminds me of for when you're watching a game in from like the Caribbean World Series or out in Japan. There's just a lot more atmosphere, a lot more noise. I kind of don't mind it. I like that different places have their own little factor, so I think that's one of them. But I know people are all up in arms and being like, it's the worst thing in the entire world. Doesn't bother me.
Well, some good news on the injury front anyway is that obviously we know Severino faced hitters the past weekend, and he's working towards a rehab assignment, which could come soon. Betances, no real updates. He's still a little bit behind Severino as far as the throwing goes to live hitters. Voit is going to start a rehab assignment in Scranton on Friday. So I think this is a big test for Voit to see how he does in-game action. But I could see him getting 3 or 4 games, probably a couple games at DH, couple games at first base. And then he's back with the Yankees, hopefully. And so Stanton, he's traveling with the team. There's no timetable. Boone, this is a quote from Boone. Saturday, he was up to 95% body weight on the anti-gravity treadmill. So
that's our update.
What are we doing here? Like he can't even run.
He can run on the moon
at 95% body weight.
Well, you don't have body weight on the moon.
You have some. It's not full. It's not. It's 1/6 Earth's gravity.
It's yeah. And
so he's 95%. Is he 95% of the moon's gravity or 95% of Earth's gravity?
Depends on what setting you have the machine on, the anti-gravity machine.
Are you
on the moon setting or are you on the Earth setting?
He's not. He's on the 95% setting.
Maybe he's training to go to Mars.
It's more gravity than the moon, less gravity than Earth. Oh, he's going. He's going to be one of the first.
I think so. Mars. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's, okay. I mean, that's what he's going for, I think. That's why everything's been so secretive.
They need like a top of the gene pool guy to populate
to
Mars.
So he's going to be going over there to recreate the
think
human
about
race.
Think about the bombs that he could hit on Mars. We think the ball is juiced on Earth. On Mars?
I don't know what the gravity is like on Mars.
7 mile long home runs.
Yeah, it's when you're looking at what the updates coming from him. So the thing about Stanton and these updates is that if you remember last time, it was like, we heard nothing. And all of a sudden he's playing again, like fast, like out of nowhere. He's in Scranton with Judge and they're in Durham playing baseball and he's hitting moonshots. So I kind of expect the same thing where like all of a sudden he's just going to be taking batting practice, looking fully healthy. And then he'll be in the lineup in like 3 days. I kind of expect that. And then they're just going to kind of see what they have with him until the end of the season.
If he comes back...
I think they're waiting for rosters to expand, personally.
Okay, I mean, that's right around the corner.
Yeah.
Say he comes back and he's okay, right? But all he can really do is DH. Is that even valuable to the Yankees?
Having a DH that can hit moonballs?
But then you're taking away
flexibility.
Then you're taking away other things from the lineup because that means you have to play either Maybin or Tauchman in the outfield, right?
Well, you're taking away an effective player who's been a player that doesn't have the name of Giancarlo Stanton, but has been a very effective player in the second half of the Yankees season, or you know even further past than that. Because you could put in anybody's name, and that player has been effective.
Right.
That's where we are today.
So I'm not knocking Giancarlo, but at the same time, ideally, they need him to be an outfielder.
It's going to be super interesting. I mean, I know I've probably said that 100 times, but you know, usually when we're looking at September call-ups, we're waiting for like you know 2 or 3 of these young guys that can really help. There's just not going to be any room for them if we continue to get guys back like that.
Position player wise, no.
Position player. Well, I mean, just across the board, pitchers too. I mean, look at what's happening with the. You know, even like Ben Heller is you know, hopefully healthy again and he's back and throwing again. Like guys like that or Jordan Montgomery's of the world, like we're seeing names that we know. And Davey Garcia is a guy that everybody's
he's just moving to the bullpen
circled
full time.
Yep,
is now
going to the bullpen. So that's an interesting move. Obviously something that they've already talked about, saying that if he was going to be a contributor, he would come out of the bullpen, which again, what does that mean? He's another 4-inning guy possibly, but they wouldn't use him as a 4-inning guy in the Bronx. They would probably use him as a flash guy, someone to come in and just get like a quick bolt of put out stuff. That's put out stuff. Maybe that's no, I just said put out stuff. That's in context.
No, pull out.
Oh,
stuff.
Pull out stuff. Damn it. I gave him way too much credit right then. I thought I just used an A-Rod-ism in context.
Did we, was it really put out? Maybe it was put out.
No,
stuff
it was
and
pull
we just
out.
Couldn't read his hair handwriting.
It was pull out stuff. There were, unless he crosses L's, it was put out stuff, which I mean, maybe he does. I could see A-Rod crossing
and spells
L's.
Pull with one L.
But yeah, you know, the roster situation, the quantity of players is going to be upper even after rosters expand. There's just not enough for all these guys to play and on one roster. We haven't even talked about Encarnacion.
No, I think Encarnacion or Voit, it's kind of like whoever's healthier is going to be on the roster.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you know, I think Encarnacion has a long shot at this point just because he's but they don't really.
Well, you don't know how his wrist heals and if he still has the same
power.
Encarnacion power that we're used to.
But he's also not a controlled player too, so I could see them like, you know, let's go.
No, of course. But if he's not productive, if he's 75% of Encarnacion, you're going to take 75% of Encarnacion to DH or 75% of Giancarlo Stanton to DH?
Yeah.
Or 75% of Voit to DH? Like, that might be the question.
Right. The difference being is that Stanton plays the outfield, whereas these other guys play first base. And if we're looking at a position that could use more flexibility, it's first base.
Yes, definitely. So if you have LeMahieu starting at first base, And you have also Encarnacion or Voit backing him up. You can shift around the DH. But there's other guys that they might have on the playoff roster that can go over to first base. Like Gio Urshela could probably play first base, no problem.
Yeah, but when you're...
Austin Romine has played first base in a...
Yeah, but you don't want to mess around with that.
Emergency situation. No, he's not going to start. But if you're in a situation where you got to do a double switch and it's the eighth inning, you can put Austin Romine at first base.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but that's the thing. Like, you're in a tough position though, because you're putting your backup catcher at first base. You know, and obviously you don't want to do that, or you know, or pitch. You know, but it does give them flexibilities, like you said, for that double switch or for, and that's really not going to happen until the World Series. But or when you're trying to do a, you know, just a late inning defensive shift around by bolstering your.
Listen, weird things happen in these playoff games.
Yeah, it's true. Having more flexibility, not starting LeMahieu at first, gives you more flexibility.
Every single playoff series, there's a weird thing where it's like a manager is running out of position players. I feel like it's happened at 2017 and 2018. Not with the Yankees last year, but didn't the World Series, like the Dodgers, the Dodgers or the Red Sox, one of those teams like ran out of position players in one of those games?
Yeah, I think at some point.
So it's like weird stuff happens because you're trying to always get the best matchup. You're trying to always shift things around. All right, let's move on. So
Vuvuzela.
That's what I said.
Kind of what you said.
You've been looking. I've seen you look at your phone for like the last 15 minutes. You've been looking that up for the entire time, haven't you?
I have. That's exactly what I've been doing.
All right. This question came in from @FB_filmroom. So we normally obviously do mailbags on Monday's show, but this is sort of just a good, I did a lot of research for this, so I wanted to make it a standalone segment. So the question, we're all begging on the Yankees being okay third time through the order in the playoffs because they can just turn to their pen. But if that's happening every game in the playoffs, we're counting on our pen to throw 4 to 5 innings per game, kind of what you were saying. That means back-to-back outings for a lot of guys. So my question is, what are Chapman, Britton, Ottavino, Green, etc.'s numbers when pitching on consecutive days? Scott, I built a spreadsheet for this shit, okay?
Did we say who this was from, by the way?
Yeah, okay. @FB_film.
Okay.
So no Yankees pitcher has pitched 3 consecutive days this year. Not consecutive games, because sometimes consecutive games don't happen on consecutive days. Consecutive days on the calendar, no one's pitched 3 days in a row, which I think is pretty impressive to manage a bullpen. And obviously that's something they're trying to achieve, because it just... There's no way, like, by accident, it could happen. It hasn't happened. So quickly, I'm going to run down these guys. Chapman has pitched 10 games on consecutive days. So the numbers I'm about to give are what they do on that second day. Chapman, 10 innings, 7 earned runs, 12 hits, 1 home run, 4 walks, 17 strikeouts. You might look at the 10 innings and 7 earned runs and say, uh-oh, that's not good. But you can really trace that to one blow up, which happened on July 15th against Tampa, where he gave up 3 hits and 3 earned runs. Otherwise, he's been pretty good. 17 strikeouts is good. So when you look at his split FIP, which is 2.26, it's actually better than his season FIP, fielder independent pitching. I calculated this shit, okay? It's basically walks, hits by pitch, strikeouts, etc. Just isolating, how is the pitcher really pitching when he's pitching on his second day? Chapman's pretty much the same guy. What? And he even had a game where he pitched twice in the same day in that doubleheader against Baltimore.
Quickly, this segment we were going to do on Sunday, like you said, right? And we kind of left it out because you did a ton of research for this one. But do you actually think that JJ and I could have talked about this?
No.
Not a chance.
That's why I...
In my eyes, it had nothing to do with you and like the amount of work that you put into it, because it was impressive the amount. We would have been throwing numbers out there that would have meant absolutely nothing to either one of us, and we would have looked at each other like complete idiots.
Right, that JJ would have looked at FIP and been like, what is FIP? How many wins does he have on his second day?
Like, he wouldn't have even gotten that far. He would have just dismissed it immediately.
Do you dismiss this stuff?
No, I think it's interesting. I just don't go to that place automatically. But when it's in front of my face, I think it's super interesting.
Chapman, so his ERA is not good, but when you isolate what he's actually doing on that second day, he's still an effective pitcher. So that's good news. Britton, in 9 games, he's allowed two earned runs. The real bad thing here is the walks, 9 walks.
Which is out of character for him. This year has been definitely the walk to K ratio is higher for Britton this year than it has been.
So when you look at his split FIP versus his season FIP, it's a little bit higher. So 4.78 split FIP versus 4.13 season FIP. And it's because of those walks. So maybe he doesn't have the same command on day two.
I mean, he doesn't. He's over a walk per inning.
You got to caveat this with small sample size.
I understand that.
Like, it's 8 1/3 innings pitch.
But he also...
Eight walks and 8 1/3 innings pitch is bad.
If you've been watching Britton all year long, you can see it. Just that's one of the things that's very clear to the eyeballs, is that the command isn't there as much. And I think it's because he's really trying to get that ball further down, because he knows if he leaves it even a hair up than he normally has, it's getting hit further.
So here's a guy, Ottavino, who's been better on his second day. In 10 games, he's pitched 11 innings, 5 hits, no runs, only 3 walks, and he's struck out 15 in 10 innings. So his split FIP is 11 innings, is 1.31 versus 3.28. Quickly, Canely has been a little bit worse on the second day. He's given up 3 home runs on his second day, but he still struck out 18 guys in 12 innings. And Chad Green has only pitched twice on his second day. And those are really the guys that you're concerned about pitching on back-to-back and maybe even back-to-back-to-back-to-back days in a belly-to-belly-to-belly.
Well, you're going back-to-back games, but not there's more off days in the playoffs.
ALCS and World Series, you could have to pitch in 3 consecutive days, games 4, 5, and 7.
Oh, really?
Or excuse me, 3, 4, and 5.
Okay. Yeah, so I think one of the people that are talking about, one of the people that's, you know, the guy that supports the opener is, you know, talking about the fact that there are built-in off days for the playoffs as well. That's a factor that you can use and schedule your opener around that. Again, it's just, you just don't know what's happening with the bullpen on the other days. That's my problem with it. This is interesting to see how these guys do. I mean, I got to believe that, like, when you're pitching on a consecutive day, that your numbers are going to be a little bit worse for the majority of players. But when we're looking at, like, Ottavino to me is a mad scientist, so he probably pitches geared towards what he looks like on that second day. Like, I could see him, like, just simulating that and, like, simulating all the circumstances and having his arm in a certain place and then, you know, hooking himself up to all these all the wires and analytics and lasers and you know, really gearing himself towards that. Like, he's that kind of guy. He's kind of a mad scientist in that sense. But I think it's really
honestly the only guy that I'm concerned with in these numbers is Britton, and it's the walks. Because if Britton is going to be, if you're going to be relying on Britton to pitch 8th inning in playoffs and he's walking guys, well, you're not going to let him try and fight through that inning. You're probably going to just go to Chapman, which also creates a problem for Chapman, because now he's pitching in multiple innings in a game, and then he might have to come back the next day as well. So if Britton is not sharp on that second day, he could create a bunch of problems for you.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, like, again, Canely is another guy that, you know, if they don't go to him earlier than that, like, he's going to be circled as a potential 8th inning guy. Like, he's becoming more of that very high leverage. We talked about him being potentially like that David Robertson type, where he comes in and becomes a fire extinguisher. You know, maybe that's not Green anymore, but possibly it is. Like, that's the thing. He's got so many different guys that he can go to. I think Boone does have a lot more belief in some of these guys in high leverage situations than any of the fan base. Like, I think the fan base would be happy seeing Canely come in a spot like that over Britton, because people have expectations of Britton and they see 2016 and it's not that. He gets crushed, whereas he's still been very good. Walks are up a little bit, but Canely's the guy who's been a resurgence and beaten expectations. So in the fans' mind, he's better.
So Britton has been the 8th inning guy all season. I don't know if that's going to change in the playoffs, although I would like to see Boone be willing to go to Britton in a situation, no matter when it is, in middle to late of the game, that you need a ground ball, because he still gets a ton of ground balls. So if a starting pitcher leaves in the 5th inning and it's 1st and 2nd, 1 out, why not go to Zach Britton and try and get a ground ball double play? Like, why do you just have to go to Ottavino or Canely, who are strikeout pitchers, so strikeouts are also valuable in those situations. But you have to be willing to go to guys at non-conventional times in the playoffs.
It's true. you just don't want to be in a situation where late in the game, and I know none of the numbers can quantify this, but when the pressure is higher, when you have everybody on pins and needles in the playoff game, a close game late in the season, or I'm sorry, late in the game, and then you don't have your best pitchers to be there in the highest leverage situation.
You just said you'd trust Canely in an eighth inning.
Right.
You're not using Canely in the fifth or sixth inning because you used Britton instead, like the game, you can lose a game in the fifth inning.
I agree with that. I totally agree with that. And it's a matter of if Boone is willing to do that. And I think we've seen managers shift their styles when it comes to the playoffs, especially because they have more of an embarrassment of riches in the pen. It's not the same guys. It's not the David Hales and the Nestor Cortezes of the world out there. There are other guys that they trust. So I think they're more willing to do that because they have more dependable arms.
Like last year in game three of the division series, when the Yankees got crushed by the Red Sox, the whole Severino warm-up debacle, they were going to lose that game anyway. But Boone went to Lance Lynn with the bases loaded and nobody out in like the fourth inning.
Yeah.
And at the time, the game was like 3-0. Mm-hmm. And Lance Lynn gave up a bases clearing triple. So all those runs were charged to Severino. So you look at Severino and say, wow, he really got crushed. But what if you brought in somebody and only gave up one run in that situation, a short inning guy, and it's 4-0 instead of 6-0 or 7-0? Maybe you can get back into that game. Just because it's a certain inning doesn't mean you can't use a guy. Just because it's the fourth inning in the playoffs doesn't mean you have to go to Luis Sessa if Luis Sessa is on this playoff roster.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. We're talking about going to Luis Sessa in a playoff game in the fourth inning? I don't like that game. That's a boot game.
I know Lance Lynn's been one of the best pitchers in the American League this year. Like, that might not make sense, but that's true. But guess what? He wasn't one of the best pitchers in the league last year.
No.
That's the equivalent. Lance Lynn was essentially Luis Sessa for the Yankees last year. He was in the bullpen in the playoffs for mop-up duty. And he came in a situation with bases loaded, and the game got away.
But that's the thing. Like Lance Lynn was one of those guys who was a starting pitcher and put in the pen. So it was kind of a different situation in the sense that Luis Sessa really has just been a mop-up guy all year long. Like he's been
yes.
His numbers are better, but the situations that he's in, you know, they're not high leverage situations by any means. When you're looking at Lynn, he was a starting pitcher that got in there. So I think the thinking is 3-0 game. To get back in the game, to stay in the game, you're going to need somebody to pitch a little bit further in. So here's Lance Lynn, who get me the out that I need, get out of this inning, and now I have a guy who can stretch the game. That's the thinking, which is not the thinking for Luis Sessa.
I get the thinking. I just don't agree with it. All right, they're going to the Dodgers. Everyone's circling this series. It should be a lot of fun. The Dodgers starters are unbelievable. They rank first in WAR, ERA, WPA, which is win probability added, first in ERA minus, which is adjusted ERA, first in strikeout to walk ratio, second in FIP, second in expected FIP, and second in Sierra. So they're an unbelievable starting rotation. They have three starters in the top 20 on Fangraph's WAR leaderboard: Kershaw, Buehler, and Ryu. It's interesting also, the Astros and Nationals each have three starters apiece on that top 20 list. So the top 20 list, nine of those pitchers are made up from three teams.
Yeah, it's it's funny. And Ryu is one of those guys that I had circled in my offseason plans as a guy that I wanted. And because he came back, he pitched at the end of the season last year. He's just one of those guys that you could tell is, I don't know, gives you steady innings, gives you one of those guys. The name in here that's killing me, that you know, not a Dodgers pitcher, but the fact that some of these teams,
I know who you're going with,
Astros and Nationals have the three of each of these guys. Patrick Corbin, it feels like every time J-Hap pitches, Corbin's pitching on the same day, just to troll us. And Corbin, while I still believe I say this with out of the side of my mouth a little bit, that was a crazy contract, that he got a lot of money. Well, maybe, you know, he's been pitching really, really, really well.
He's been one of the 20 best pitchers in baseball this year. And I don't remember exactly where he was on this list, but I don't think he was like 20. He was like much higher than that.
It seems like every time J-Hap struggles, Corbin's out there throwing a gem.
Yeah.
I know we're going to, it looks like to line up where Paxton, Sabathia, and Herman will go for the Yankees. Sabathia, I know he's like a three inning guy at this point, so I don't know who's going to be backing him up. But we've got Tanaka going the last game in Oakland, Paxton going the first game in LA. Every start for each of those pitchers is big from here on out because you're going to have to rely on those guys in the playoffs. I feel like I say that every week, but
we're looking for momentum to build. We're looking for these guys to just figure out the issues that we have. You know, like we're at this point in the season, I feel like it's a weekly Festivus. I did the Festivus with JJ last week or on Monday, just because he had things to air out with me personally, I believe. But this one is now all of us just kind of like airing out our grievances about these starting pitchers, and we need them to just figure it out. So now is the time where you just figure it out. We got some good competition coming up. Let's figure this stuff out. Let's show us, give us the confidence, even though nobody else cares about this besides the fan base, that we feel good. We just want that ability to feel good about a guy before a game. That's it. That's all anybody wants.
So you can have your heart broken in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's all. We just want some
Would you rather go into a playoff game not having any confidence in the starting pitcher, so if he doesn't pitch well, you can say, see, I told you so, or having confidence in the starting pitcher where your heart is broken if he doesn't pitch well?
I know which one you're on. You want this. The see, I told you so, because...
Of course. That's why, see, okay, this gets to the heart of why you always say I'm negative. This gets to the heart of why I'm negative.
I don't just say you're always negative. It's because you're negative.
I'm negative because then it's a win-win situation for me. If I'm right and things go wrong, I get to say, I told you so. That's a win. If I'm negative and things don't go what I say and the Yankees win, then I'm happy. So there's no losing for me.
I mean, yeah, there is, because you could look at the other side of it where you go with positivity and expect good things, and you make some predictions, and then you're an absolute genius because you can see the future. So, you know, yeah, I mean, you can live on your glass ceiling all you want. I like to bust through that
thing. I will live on my negative island, and you can live in your fake.
Oh, it's real, baby. It's real. Positive. It's real, and it's spectacular.
You know what's not real?
Sexual enhancing drugs being the new PED.
Yeah.
Hashtag Chubgate.
The boners that these players are getting from the gas station sexual enhancement pills.
That's the thing. Like you can't play like full on. It's that's why it's Chubgate.
Chubgate.
Because you can't walk around with just like, you know.
Well, how would it work with wearing a cup? Like,
you know, I think a lot of them don't wear cups personally, but yeah.
Every infielder has to wear a cup. Outfielders, maybe not. Infielders have to wear cups.
Yeah, but some of them probably don't.
So, if you have not seen the news, Jeff Passan wrote an article on MLB.com that the MLB has issued a memo to the Players Union warning that sexual enhancers may include PEDs, which could cause a drug test fail, and that the use of gas station...
I was going to say, not just sexual enhancers... Gas station sexual.
Oh no, it's the cheap over the counter ones like Viagra, Cialis. Those don't have PEDs in them. If players need to get a prescription for Viagra, they can go out and get a prescription for Viagra, and they're not going to fail a test.
It's the stuff.
It's when they go to 7-Eleven and buy a pack for $5, so they can go out at 3 a.m. and bang the girl that they met in Seattle.
Whoa, what I'm not even picturing that. What I'm picturing is going into the sketchy ass gas station, going into the bathroom, popping a quarter or 50 cents into the machine. Turning it, getting some protection, and getting a little pick me up.
It's like with
it's the like a condom, dollar. It's like $1.75 worth of quarters.
With the condom comes the gas station boner pill. Just like in an old school pack of baseball cards, you got a stick of bubble gum.
So there's a whole other element to this news. The fact that Jeff Passan is the guy that put it out there, and I don't know if you're a Jeff Passan guy, or I have become a Jeff Passan guy this year, purely for his bit on Le Batard. I don't know if you heard this, when he did his Elmo impression. When he did his Elmo impression, he's got a kid, and I was never an Elmo guy. I kind of kept Elmo away from Kemp just because I didn't want to hear that annoying voice. But when I heard Jeff Passan do it and do a breaking news trade deadline in the Elmo voice, I lost my shit. It's hilarious. So now when I see him tweet something, I'm like, it's hard for me not to picture him saying it in that Elmo voice. And when I see with the context of his tweet, well, you go into his...
Can you read the tweet in an Elmo voice?
You go into his replies, and it's pretty funny. People saying the same thing, because it's hard to now picture him without it. But it kind of... It's definitely built him up on the likability scale. But let me ask you this.
Are these players taking these drugstore enhancement pills because they just want sexual performance? Or have they found something that they perform better on the baseball field or in the weight room because of whatever cut up shit is being put in these cheap boner pills?
Right.
Like, which one is it? I think it's the latter.
So to me, this is baseball saying, we see it, just so you know, we see it. And this is also the players being ahead of baseball, which is always going to happen until too many people do it and it hits the masses. And then you have Balco. So, like, that's why Chubbgate will be a thing at some point. I think we're seeing the beginnings of it. And the fact that there are all of a sudden, you know, just certain things that are being put out there. But yeah, no, I think I've always thought that the players are going to be ahead of testing, because that's just the nature of it. Testing is always trying to catch up with what they're testing for. So I think in sports, you're always going to see that. You know, I think probably cycling is like the standard of where we're at with PEDs. There's some a really good, I forget the name of it, but it's a really good Netflix documentary about a guy who purposely takes steroids to
Icarus.
Vicarious. Really, really, really good documentary. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen
it won Oscar for best documentary a few years ago. Because it zigs in the middle of the documentary when you think it's going to zag. You think it's just going to follow this guy trying to win this cycling tournament taking PEDs. And then he gets like caught up in the Russian doping scandal.
It's wild. It's absolutely wild. And it's all real, which is crazy. So it's really good. If you haven't seen it, go watch that.
Two players have claimed this year that is why they failed the PED test.
Who were they?
Were not named.
Oh, right. I thought you meant publicly. So that's two guys that we probably don't really know about, because there really haven't been any big name guys.
Could have been minor league guys. I know a bunch of minor league guys have been popped for steroids this year.
Yeah. It's, you know, look, it's when you're, what's his name? Golden Tate was just popped in the NFL for what he claims is, for in vitro type stuff, like male fertilization pills. So they're all, you know, going back down to that region if we're looking at where we're going here. But it's interesting. I think it's baseball trying to get out ahead of something, or at least just saying, hey, we're here. We understand.
We see what you're doing. Yeah. And then this quote towards the end of the article, Lamar Odom fell into a coma after significant dose of so-called herbal Viagra. A sexual enhancement pill.
Lamar Odom had a lot of things happening like that.
Was it the herbal Viagra or all the crack that he was smoking?
There was a lot. Lamar Odom was just a tragic figure at certain points. It seems like he's getting his life together. But no, that guy was in trouble for a while.
I definitely think, because these guys could get, if they really wanted Viagra or Cialis to perform sexually, they could get that from team doctors. No problem. I think and maybe this is the cynicism in me.
It's not, man. These are greenies. These are the greenies.
This is, it's equivalent to a greenie where they take these long road trips, right? They land in Oakland and they're playing a late game. Their bodies aren't adjusted. Pop a fake dick pill and let's see what happens out there on the field.
I think at some point you're going to start seeing some of these, like, these energy boosts, the 4-hour energies and things like that, like, because I guarantee these guys are pop, like, drinking those things like crazy. We're gonna start seeing some different stuff in those. Like, the technology is out there, the chemistry is out there, where they can always stay ahead of the testing.
How many of these has Tommy Canley taken this year?
Oh, the Chubb pills, a lot.
He has replaced his Red Bull with fake gas station boner pills.
They might be custom fitting cups at this point for some of these guys to, you know, protect them with
elongated cups.
There's different. I think there's going to be different factors of protection.
Hold on. Training staff, can you tilt my cup to the left? I got a leaner.
It's just there's so many ways that this is going to go on Twitter. That's going to be amazing. And tragic at the same time for some players, I'm sure. But it's really good content.
Would you rather get popped for just traditional PEDs or popped for PEDs because you took one of these pills?
Oh, definitely a Chubb pill, because then I have at least something I can say. Well, I wasn't cheating.
But then you've got the stigma that, oh, you can't get it up.
Oh, no, that's not. I mean, not for these guys. They're just party boys. You're just a party boy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the counter argument. It's just that, like, they're partying so much after these games. Not all of them, some of them. That, I can imagine Tyler Wade dabbling in these pills.
So, Tyler, that was the first person I thought in my head. And I was going to say him until you did. When they break out the fog machine and the lights in the clubhouse, like, Tyler Wade.
He passes them around on little doilies.
Tyler Wade's my guy in the corner with the glow sticks. He's also got the dick pills, and he's out there, like, you know, throwing them out like candy. So yeah, I'm picturing like the individually packaged lifesavers that you get at like a restaurant. That's what I'm picturing in my head. It's got the really hard wrapper. Yeah.
Yep. Judge and Wade are boys from their time in Scranton. And I can just imagine Judge being like shaking his head, like, "You're gonna take another one of those things, man?
Like, stay away from me when you're on those things."
Yeah.
I don't like who you are when you're on those things.
All right, that concludes the dick pill talk and all of the rest of the talk. One more game in Oakland, then an exciting Dodgers series. Submit your mailbag questions for Monday's episode. Also, a quick shout out to AJ, who did the post-game recap video on the social channels last night, Wednesday night. He is the podcast's new intern. He crushed it on the post-game recap, but he's also helping out with mailbags and voicemails. We did voicemails last week. We want to keep doing voicemails every week. Call up the voicemail line. It's 646-480-0342. Tell us who you think does the most boner pills. Or tell us about this Oakland series or the Dodger series or whatever the hell else you want to talk about. Any last words, Scott?
Yeah, if you don't want to put your voice to a boner pill talk, you can put it in the comments when you give us a 5-star rating review in Apple Podcasts as well. So, you know, written, oral, however you want to do it, talking about the dick pills, whatever you want to do.
You did not just say oral with dick pills in the same sentence. God damn it, Scott.
I didn't do that. But no, we appreciate it, guys. Thanks for listening. And this is the West Coast trip. I hope everybody's staying alive and taking care of their bodies, because I know I'm not. I'm physically... I swear to God, the degenerate in me last night, I'm like, I'm going to bed. Someone's already doing the recap. Like, why do I need to say, wait, this game is horrible? I'm in bed watching the game on my phone. Complete degenerate.
You know what you need?
The anti-dick pill. I need something to knock me out.
All right. We'll talk to you Monday.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.